welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in 75 countries or more worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural disasters when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is terribly wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all of the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you experience for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then just click onto the email machine and send an email request for the General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about natural disasters, and if you're like I am, you're probably fascinated by the prospects of natural disasters, especially when you see movies like Earthquake. There was a story about an earthquake, and you see this heroine, she's usually a scientist, a blonde, and she's rude and obnoxious, she's arrogant, she's a foxy chick, and she's the dominant player in the salvation of the city, which is going to be struck by an earthquake or a volcano. I saw one time that a volcano go off in downtown Los Angeles. And then there's the asteroid. You know, that asteroid is coming in and it's going to strike New York City. And then there's this giant tsunami, this giant wall of water that hits New York City. And we sit there and we watch these movies, and they all have one thing in common. You ever notice that? One thing is in common. There's no God anywhere on the horizon. These are natural events that transpire, and they're totally within the control and the purview of human beings, particularly governments, which are typically inept and dumb. Well, kind of fits, kind of like FEMA in New Orleans. And then the brilliant scientist, always a female, always arrogant and always blonde, who comes in to save the day, but nobody listens to her, of course. until the last scene or two, when everybody has to admit, well, Margaret, you were right, and we were all wrong. They'll have that story flow, that storyline that goes through them. The concept that there is a God out here who's punishing us for our sins, crimes, our criminal behavior, is nowhere on the horizon. That's not on the radar screen at all. So I thought I would raise that to your level of consciousness and see how that plays out. Now, these in the real world here, these natural disasters fall into three groups. Fortunately for us dummies, the United Nations and other think tanks have synthesized this for us. These three groups are their geologic, that is, their earthquakes and volcanoes. They cause natural disasters. Then there's biologic. Those are disease disasters. That's what we're talking about here today. And then they're meteorological. They're hurricanes and droughts and floods and things like that caused by the weather. Now, in talking about these biologic diseases last time, we were going through, and I said there were 10 of these. No, I said there was 12. 12 of these biologic diseases that scientists today are concerned about going pandemic. Now, here's the list. They either have been pandemic in the past, they are now pandemic going around the world, or they are expected to go pandemic at some time in the future. You know, Spanish flu has been pandemic, killed 50 million people. And then there's AIDS, which has killed 40 million people and is pandemic right now. And then there's the avian bird flu that is expected to go pandemic at any time in the future, probably within the next 18 months from what they're telling us. I mentioned that the last time. It was last week when we were talking about this thing of the Spanish flu. I said there's more to this story than meets the eyeball, because it's gone to the level of propaganda now. It's not just a news story. It's not just, let me report these facts to you. It's a prediction. These people are prophets. They're telling us in no uncertain terms, not if it happens, but when it happens. And they keep emphasizing that. When? And then our governments are spending billions of dollars. Congress is in the process of appropriating $4 billion to combat this avian bird flu. Not that they're going to do anything for you. I mean, you saw that in New Orleans and on the Gulf Coast. I mean, government is about as ineffective as any institution could be. Government's the last place you want to go for salvation. You're sure to die if you're relying upon government. But here's the list of these 12 diseases. Spanish flu, that was the biggie back in 1918. Bubonic plague, that was the biggie back in the Middle Ages. Now we have Lassa fever, Ebola fever, cholera, and avian bird flu. There's a couple of three new ones that you probably haven't heard much about. Hemorrhagic fever, Marburg virus, Rift Valley fever. Now, we're hearing a lot about the avian bird flu. We all know about AIDS. And then there's typhus and cholera. Typhus and cholera. Now, this malaria kills 3 million people a year. Latest numbers that I saw. 3 million people a year die every year from malaria. It's a disease caused by mosquito-borne pathogens. I don't know if it's a virus or a bacteria, but one or the other, and it gets into people, especially in Africa, in Asia, and kills 3 million a year. Let me repeat that. 3 million a year. In 10 years, that is the decade of the 1990s, killed 30 million people. Let's go back 30 years. The 70s, the 80s, the 90s. And let's kill 3 million people a year for 10 years. That's 30, 60, 90. Let's add on a few more years, you know, from 2000 to 2005. You know, let's try 30, 60. That's 100 million people in the last 40 years from one disease, malaria. Common disease. It's everywhere all the time. Mosquitoes are spreading it all over. We don't have it here in the United States because we have a better health and hygiene regimen here than they have in Africa. Basically, these diseases are caused by bad hygiene. That's the basic cause. Second cause is bad nutrition. bad hygiene, and bad nutrition. Both of those subject matters are covered extensively in the Bible. Remember I told you about this God called the God of Abraham, a different guy. Not the ordinary, everyday, run-of-the-mill God, you know, like Allah and Buddha and Jesus and these everyday garden-variety gods that can't stop hurricanes and don't get too concerned about volcanoes and earthquakes. I'm talking about a God here that says that he lays diseases on people. I showed you that last time in Exodus 15:26. Says, I won't lay these diseases on you. And then in Leviticus 26, remember last time I showed you, I said, here he is in the first person. He says, if you don't practice my law, I'm going to lay these diseases on you. And he lays out consumption, that's TV, and a couple of three others. And as you read through these prophecies in the scripture, you know, he says, now I'm going to get real furious with you. He uses the word fury. I showed you he uses the word jealous. I'm a jealous God. And I visit the iniquity, that's lawlessness, criminal behavior, of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. So he equates people that don't practice his law with people who hate him. Then he tells us in 1 John 5:3 that this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. So if you want to show love to God, you keep his commandments. That kind of makes sense. If you loved your parents, you'd obey them and keep their commandments. Take out the garbage, make your bed, and wash the dishes. Mow the grass. A few little chores around the house. Now, when we broke off last time, we were looking at cholera. I finished cholera. Let me tell you about these other 11 diseases. The Spanish flu in 1918 and 1919. It began in August of 1918 in three disparate locations in Brest, Boston, Massachusetts, and Freetown, South Africa. It's an unusually severe and deadly strain of influenza spread worldwide, and the disease spread across the world, killing 25 million in the course of 6 months. It killed more than that in 3 years, but it killed 25 million in 6 months. I mean, people were terrorized by this flu epidemic. Now, the outer numbers are 100 million. The more moderate numbers are 50 million. And, of course, in Europe and the United States, the number is about 20 to 30 million. Then there was the Asian flu of 1957-58. It's called the H2N2 strain, caused about 70,000 deaths in the United States. I don't have numbers for the rest of the world, but you can just about bet that if 70,000 died in the United States, 10 times that many died in other parts of the world. It was first identified in China in late February of 57. The Asian flu spread to the United States by June of 57. Hong Kong flu, that was in 1968-69. It was the H3N2 variety, caused about 34,000 deaths in the United States. This virus was first detected in Hong Kong in early 1968, and it spread to the United States later that year. Influenza A, called H3N2 viruses, still circulate today. The SARS epidemic, remember that SARS story back in 2003? A SARS coronavirus originating from mainland China spread to Hong Kong and then spread to Taipei, Singapore, and Toronto, Canada, among many other countries. The epidemic disease of wartime was typhus, sometimes called camp fever because of its pattern of flaring up in times of strife, and it's also known as goal fever and ship fever because it inhabits or spreads wildly in cramped quarters such as jails and ships. Emerging during the Crusades, it had its first impact in Europe in 1489 in Spain. During fighting between the Christian Spaniards and the Muslims in Granada, the Spanish lost 3,000 to war casualties and 20,000 to typhus. In 1528, the French lost 18,000 troops in Italy and lost supremacy in Italy to the Spanish. In 1542, 30,000 people died of typhus while fighting the Ottomans in the Balkans. The disease also played a major role in the destruction of Napoleon's Grand Army in Russia in 1811. Typhus also killed numerous prisoners in the Nazi concentration camps during World War II. Now, encounters between European explorers and populations in the rest of the world often introduced local epidemics of extraordinary virulence. Disease killed the entire native population of the Canary Islands in the 16th century, half of the native population of Hispaniola in 1518 was killed by smallpox. Smallpox also ravaged Mexico in the 1520s, killing 150,000, including the Emperor of Peru in the 1530s, aiding the European conquistadors. Measles killed a further 2 million Mexican natives in the 1600s, and as late as 1849, as many as 40,000 out of 150,000 Hawaiians are estimated to have died of measles, whooping cough, and influenza. Now, there are also a number of unknown diseases that were extremely serious but have now vanished, so the etiology of these diseases cannot be established. Examples include the previous mentioned plague in 430 BC in Greece, the English sweat in the 16th century in England, which struck people down in an instant and was more greatly feared than even the bubonic plague. Now, how about the concern about future pandemics, epidemics, and plagues? Well, diseases that may possibly attain pandemic proportions include Lassa fever, Rift Valley fever, Marburg virus, Ebola virus, and Bolivian hemorrhagic fever. As of 2002, however, the recent emergence of these diseases into the human population has shown their virulence is high, such that they tend to burn out in geographically confined areas, or that their effect on humans is currently limited. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, can be considered a global pandemic today, but it is currently most extensive in southern and eastern Africa. It is restricted to a small proportion of the population in other countries, and it's only spreading slowly in those countries. If there were to be a true destruction of life pandemic, it would, in all probability, be similar to HIV. For example, a constantly evolving disease. Antibiotic-resistant superbugs may also revive diseases previously regarded as conquered. I'll pause right there and make a comment. Bubonic plague is easily taken care of or controlled by antibiotics. Now, we Americans, I can't speak for the rest of you people in the world, but here in America, we love our antibiotics so much so that we put it in the chicken feed, the cattle feed, and we then eat the chicken and the cattle, and we Americans are practically immune from antibiotics. I mean, you can poke antibiotics into an American, and the disease pathogens over here develop into superbugs, we call them now. And now, there are fewer and fewer of these antibiotics that work. We're down to two antibiotics that we can depend on. Two. I mean, there's about 20 of them. And only about two now are of any great value to us because the bugs, that is, the germs and bacteria, have now evolved, or they have mutated, I think is a more correct term, until they're no longer affected by these antibiotics. Now, there's another factor that gets into this equation over here. Let me flip over here to a section here on advertisements here. And let me tell you a little story. I believe it's in this section right here. It's just, there's a guy up here in Iowa, did a little work with open pollinated seed. And it must be over here in this section. Stand by now. Don't run off. Let's see here. Here we are. During World War II, you know, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens, and they helped to provide their own food and their own fiber for themselves and our country. Well, today, here in America, today, over half the food that we eat out of our supermarkets is now imported from outside of our borders. Our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce and is nutritionally deficient. Okay? Now, let me preach a sermon here. I'll flip over here to an unusual statute. It's in Leviticus 19, verse 19. Jot that down. Go check this out and see if I'm lying to you. Leviticus 19:19. It says, "You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed, and neither shall a garment mingled with linen or wool come upon you. All right, let's zero in here on you shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Do you know what mingled seed is? It's called hybrid seed. Hybrid. Now, we've gone a step beyond hybrid seed here in the United States. We now have genetically modified seed. We weren't satisfied with just hybridizing the seed, that is, mingled seed. We're now getting right down to the DNA and the RNA and the genes, and we're splicing genes, and we're making dollies the sheep, you know, and we're just really getting into this hot and heavy. Now, there's a statute where the God of Abraham said, don't do that. Now, I've mentioned to you, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. So when you eat hybrid seed, when you mingle your seed, when you do genetic experimentation, there are some side effects that come from that. So let me read on here. A guy by the name of Adolf Steinbrom, actually a Stem Brom, it's S-T-E-M Brom, Stem Brom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients usually added to commercial feeds. When compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Stem Brom's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese, and the same result was also seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. All right, now let's go back to Leviticus 19:19. Notice that there is a prohibition here. There's a statute that says don't do that. It's bad for you. Doesn't tell you why. Doesn't give you any scientific. It isn't footnoted, no scientific results from exhaustive studies from Monsanto or the Food and Agriculture Administration of the United Nations or the FDA. Just a statement that says you shall not mingle your seed or make hybrid seed. Here's what happens. Did you notice here that these hybridized seeds are nutritionally deficient? They taste real good. And if taste were the condition precedent for good health, we would be the healthiest people in the world because our food really tastes good. You know, when we go to McDonald's, we don't go there because that crap tastes bad. We go there because it tastes real good. And I've said before, if God wanted to make healthy, nutritious food, he would have made broccoli and Brussels sprouts to taste like Kit Kats and Mars bars. But he didn't. He made them taste real icky. They're real nasty. Brussels sprouts and broccoli. But unfortunately, these Brussels sprouts and broccoli are filled with vitamins and minerals and nutrients that you need to sustain your immune system to ward off disease. That's why I've said before, if you got sick, it's because you broke a law. Now, maybe you're not knowledgeable about the law. Maybe you didn't know you were breaking the law. I mean, after all, you just went down to Kroger's, walked over to the fresh fruits and vegetables, and you picked up a bunch of garlic, or you picked up some carrots or peas or beans, and you took them home and cooked them and ate them, and you thought, well, that's pretty good. See, I'm eating healthy. I'm eating fruits and vegetables. But unbeknownst to you, Monsanto and the seed companies hybridized, mingled that seed. And so now that broccoli that you're eating, partner, is 875% short of copper, 345% short of iron, 205% short of manganese, 75% short of crude protein, and on it goes. And because of these nutritional deficiencies, your body is now nutritionally deficient, your immune system is no longer working at 100%, and along comes one of these bugs. Doesn't even have to be a superbug, just an everyday, ordinary garden variety flu virus, and you get sick. And that's why you get sick, because you have a weakened immune system caused by bad diet. Now, your weakened immune system can also be caused by polluted water, polluted air. It can be caused by your environment. And over in Africa, oftentimes, there are diseases that are hygienic diseases. Diseases like cholera, where people defecate and urinate into their water supply. Whether they know it or not, they don't just necessarily run down to the river and pull down their pants and do it in the river. But by one way or another, the feces enters the river, then somebody downstream takes it out of the river, and then they drink it and they get cholera, they get malaria, they get some other disease. Now here in America we do the same thing, but we're more hygienic about it. See, we treat it with chemicals first. So what we do up in Dubuque, Iowa, is we run our sewage out into the Mississippi River, where you people down in St. Louis can draw your water out of the river. But have no fear. It has been chemically treated. So we treat the stuff with fluoride and chlorine. And then we find out that this chlorine hardens your arteries and gives you arterial sclerosis. That is, you get hardened arteries and then they break and you have a stroke. So we can trade cholera for stroke and heart attack and various other degenerative diseases, cancers and some others. I mean, you know, there's a web of intrigue and there's a web of crime here, and this is called sin. It's in the Bible that the old King James people called crime sin. And so when you broke the law, you were called a sinner. Today we'd call you a criminal. Now the states come in on this. Now, the states come along, they say, well, we're here to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And that's why we're putting chlorine in your water to protect you from cholera. What they don't tell you is we're giving you arterial or atherosclerosis in the process, in the bargain. So we're trading here in America communicable diseases for degenerative diseases. So we want flu vaccine. And when we take the flu vaccine to protect us from the flu, we find that we have a 10 times greater chance of getting Alzheimer's disease. So what do you want, Alzheimer's disease or the flu? Because if you get the flu, you stand a possible, a 1 in 100,000 chance of dying. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but it's not very great. But if you get this flu vaccine, you have a 10 times greater chance, not absolute certainty, but you have a greater chance of getting Alzheimer's disease. So I guess you got to choose between which diseases. Now, I asked this question last time. I said, is this natural? We call this natural disaster. Is it natural for you to get the flu, Alzheimer's disease, or to suffer from a hurricane, a volcano, or an earthquake? Is this natural? Well, if you're an evolutionist, the answer is absolutely. These are cycles. This is just the way the world has evolved, and so this is the breaks of the game. And then the other side of the coin is, you didn't evolve. You were specially created. And because you were created, there is a God. Whether you call this God Allah, or Buddha, or Jesus, or Zeus, or Bibel, or Amun-Ra. You know, there's a God out there, and you believe in this God. Now, the problem that most people have with their gods is their gods aren't protecting them. That was my observation in the last couple programs. I said, hey, weren't you guys praying? Whatever your God's name is, or whoever he is, or wherever he is, didn't you say, hey, hold this Hurricane Katrina back, would you? This Hurricane Rita? Hey, back off on us here, would you? I don't think those people up in Pakistan were praying to Allah and saying, oh, send us an earthquake so we can be tested and tried so that we can enter into the pearly gates. I mean, I've never run across people like that. So my observation is that there's got to be a cause and effect relationship. And here in the Bible, it tells you pretty plainly what that cause and effect relationship is. Number one, there's a law that says, don't mingle your seed. We came along and said, no, God, you got that all wrong. You got that all wrong. We are going to hybridize our seed. We're going to make better seed, disease-resistant seed, better-tasting fruits and vegetables. And we did. And unfortunately, they're nutritionally deficient. Now, if we could hybridize their seed and make them nutritionally superior, and I see young people, you know, born in the city, they go to school, and then they go to college, and then they get degrees after their names, and they get to be real smart, and then they go to work for Monsanto, and then Monsanto says, we'll pay you a lot of money if you invent something that we can sell. Some guy splits some genes and seeds and says, hey, look what I can do. I can hybridize these seeds. I can genetically modify these seeds. Monsanto says, well, that sounds like a nice idea. And they go out and they try to market that. And if they can market that and make profit and gain, they're going to do that. They don't have any interest here in Leviticus 19:19, or any interest in God, or any interest in nutritional qualities and nutritional values of the food. They have an interest in making profit, selling stocks, selling seeds, selling Roundup Ready soybean seeds so that they can make money. So I come along and rain on your parade and tell you, hey, listen, you can do that if you want to, but if you do, you're going to have to suffer a penalty for it, and the penalty is disease, it's bad health. So make your choice, make up your mind. Did you want to eat out of Kroger's, or did you want to eat out of your own garden, or did you want to buy some open-pollinated fruits and vegetables that are produced with higher levels of vitamins and minerals that will build a stronger immune system so that your immune system wards off the diseases? Now, I'm not running out to get vaccinated for the flu. And I'm not excited about going down here to Kroger's and buying some genetically modified soybeans. I avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. There's a better way. I contend there's a better way to health. There's a better way to avoid these natural epidemics, these natural disasters, which in large part are caused by our own actions. Or as they say in law, you are the proximate cause of your own injury. Now, it's hard to make a connecting link between the people in northern Pakistan being the proximate cause of their own injury in an earthquake that killed 70,000 of them, but I think I've made my point. There is a God in heaven. His name is not Allah. I don't know what his name is, but I do know who he is, and he's the God of Abraham. He's a different cat with a different stripe. He's a jealous God, and he gets furious, and he's really ticked off about people giving him the finger and not following instructions. That's what he said, and I read that to you last time. Now, you put that into the equation, and all of a sudden, that earthquake up in Pakistan makes a whole lot more sense. And these disease epidemics start to take on a different character when we take a look here in the scripture and we look at specific laws, and a guy tells us, don't do that, we give him the finger and do it anyway. You know, did you ever do that with your daddy? Your daddy said, go out and mow the grass. You gave him the finger and said, I'm watching TV. What happened to you? I never did do that, but I did do something similar a couple of times. And after my daddy bounced me off the wall, beat the living hell out of me a couple of times, I woke up to reality and I didn't do that again. I was a very precocious child. Bounced me off the wall a couple of times, and I can learn real fast. Hang on a second. I've got to give you a reminder here. That reminder is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page. Scroll it down, take a look at it, if you can read. If you've been to public school, maybe that won't help you, but if you can read, you can read more information about our school on the web page. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives. It can be accessed through the web page. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. You may be driving down the road listening to this program right now on the radio, saying to yourself, well, I've heard this crazy lunatic before. Where'd he come from? So you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, and you can look back for years and years and years, hundreds and maybe even thousands, 2,000 programs are archived on that internet, on that link. And they're put on there by title. So if you knew the name of the program, like this week's series of programs here on natural disasters, you look up, I don't know, N or D for disaster or natural. I don't know how the guy does that, but somehow or another, the archivist puts that on there, natural disasters. Or if you knew that the date, you know, was, say, November the 14th or 15th when this is being aired, you could go to that date and you could pull it up. So try that and you go home, listen to the Law Hour and editorial review at your convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, the comments and views, the expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. So don't blame them on anybody else, just me. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. That's because they're all normal, everyday garden variety Joe Sixpack people, and I'm a raving lunatic. And you shouldn't listen to screwballs like me. So don't blame it on the advertisers or the station. They're really nice guys. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about natural disasters. What causes them? Where do they come from? I pointed out to you last time here in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 that these are not normal. I said that just a little while ago. I said, you know, a hurricane at 150 miles an hour blowing through your neighborhood is not rain in due season. Now, if all of us people down here on planet Earth would wake up and get our act cleaned up, and if we would stop dinging our neighbor's wife, stealing, lying, cheating, and exaggerating on our insurance claims, and actually practiced these laws. You know, we didn't eat this hybrid food, and we actually ate good food and lived clean, normal lives, you know, drank clean water and so on. We would not have sickness and disease. All sickness and disease is the results of the violation of 18 health laws that are laid out by this God, this unusual, freaky, jealous, furious God called the God of Abraham. In the scripture, he tells you, don't do this, but do that. Now, if we would do what we were told, you know, if we could sit down, shut up for a change, fold our hands, and just follow instructions, things would go a lot better for us. Not that we can do that, not that we're going to do that, but if we could. So if there's 4 or 5 of you out there that are waking up and saying, I got a letter here the other day, I got to share it with you. I'm not going to share the letter per se, but guy wrote me a letter and he said, hey, I was listening to your program here on aspartame. And he said, my wife is sick and she's been going to the doctors and she's been doing this and that and another thing and really feeling in poor health. And so I told her about this aspartame. She drinks a lot of Diet Coke. And so she was feeling pretty puny, pretty poor one day. And then he said, listen, why don't you just for 30 days just lay off the Diet Cokes and 30 days from now, see if that makes you feel any better. She did. In 30 days, she was totally cured. Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. See, that Diet Coke, that aspartame, is a poison. It's a toxin. And you can take a lot of that toxin into your body, and your body can deal with it pretty well. Of course, you get headaches, and you get diarrhea, and you get sick and achy, and you don't feel good, and so on. Sometimes it gets real nasty, and you get other symptoms over there, but if you want to feel better, stop poisoning yourself. It's kind of like banging your head on the wall, you know. your forehead's bloody and you feel real bad and it hurts real bad. And one day somebody suggests to you, why don't you quit banging your head on the wall there for a little while and just see if you like it better. And so just try it. Anyway, this lady cured herself. She'd been to the doctors and the hospital, and she'd been through tests and all the rest of it. Couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. That's not surprising. All those doctors who went to college and got letters after their names and couldn't find their hind ends at high noon with both hands and a roadmap. A lot when it comes to disease. Now, in Leviticus chapter 26, remember there's first 14 verses here. It says, now, if you do this, if you walk in my statutes, if you keep my commandments and do them, I'm going to give you rain in due season. The land shall yield her increase. The trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall reach to the vintage. The vintage shall reach to the sowing time. And you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. Now listen, up in the New England states right now, you're just getting over some floods up there. Floods are not rain in due season, boys and girls. And out in the West, you got this drought condition out there, see? And drought is not rain in due season. Can you follow that? Now, I'm sure you guys are out there praying for rain in the West and praying for sunshine in the East. And, you know, some of you guys out there, there ought to be at least one Elijah running around here that God will actually listen to. He doesn't listen to me. So I'm not the guy that you want to... You want to be out here praying for you. I'm just making a report. I'm a reporter, so I'm just telling you that if there was one righteous man out there like Elijah, God would listen to that guy and he would heal your land. Unfortunately, I don't even think you got one righteous man out there. Remember one time over at Sodom and Gomorrah, Big Mike was traveling around with Melchizedek. Melchizedek was the guy that you people call Jesus today. It's really not his name, but that's what you call him. And so this Jesus and Melchizedek, one of the same guy, they were walking over towards Sodom and Gomorrah. It's not very far over there, 65 miles from downtown Jerusalem over to Sodom and Gomorrah. And as they were walking along, they stopped over at Abraham's place. And Abe came out and said, "Hey, boss, what you doing?" He says, "I'm on my way to Sodom and Gomorrah." And he said, "What are you doing over there?" He says, "I'm going to nuke them." And Abe said, "What? What? You're going to do what?" He says, "Yeah, I'm going to nuke them both. They're full of a bunch of perverts over there, and I'm going to kill them all." Now, this is sweet Jesus. He says, "I'm going over there and nuke all those people." Now, I don't know how many people were living in Sodom and Gomorrah at that time. Josephus said there was about 100,000. 100,000, that's a bunch of people. That's about like Springfield, Missouri, or Boise, Idaho. Pretty good size town. And Abraham said, "Well, listen, boss, just in case there might be 50 righteous over there. Come on, boss. Are you going to destroy those two cities over there? If there's 50 righteous people living there, you're going to kill the righteous along with the guilty? You're going to kill the innocent with the bad apples?" Well, I guess God thought about that for a minute, and he said, "Well, you got a good point there, Aiden. No, I probably wouldn't kill that. I probably wouldn't destroy all those people. I wouldn't kill all those bad guys if there was 50 righteous over in those two places." Well, Abraham, you know, not being a dummy, he thought about that for a minute, and he said, "Well, God, what if there was 5 short? What if there was only 45? So he asked Melchizedek that very question. He says, "Well, you know, suppose there were 5 short and there was 45. Would you destroy those cities if there was 5 short? There's 45 righteous people over there. You going to destroy those cities? Kill all of those perverts over there when there's 45 righteous?" And God said, no, I probably wouldn't do it for 45. Abraham, he got a little bolder now. I guess he figured he was on a roll. So he says, "How about 40? No, I wouldn't destroy the places for 40 righteous. 35, 30. 25, 20. 15, 10. I mean, you run this thing down to 10. I think he could have sold it for 5 if he'd have put his mind to it, but he chickened out and he quit at 10. He says, "Yeah, you find 10 righteous over there, Abe, and I won't destroy those cities for 10 righteous." 10. So, They went on over there to Sodom and Gomorrah, and they could only find Lot, his wife, and two daughters. That was four. Wasn't enough. So he didn't kill the four righteous. These two angels blew into town and said, "Hey, Lot, pack up. Get out." Mrs. Lot said, "No, I got to get a U-Haul truck in here and pack up all my belongings." And the angels got a little insistent, and they said, "Lady, you don't seem to understand. We're on a time, very, 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 you know, there's a time schedule here. There's a bomb going to drop here at about 11 o'clock in the morning, and look at it, it's 9:30. We haven't got time to get a U-Haul in here. You got to leave with a shirt on your back, lady." And so these four people left Sodom and Gomorrah. They got out of town. And that's why I mentioned to you a little earlier, you know, have you ever thought about maybe leaving the Gulf Coast? Have you thought about maybe moving out of New Orleans? Have you thought about maybe selling your house in downtown Sodom and Gomorrah and moving out before these angels blow into town and say, "Hey, trooper, time for you to leave with the shirt on your back"? I mean, you might get out of there with a whole lot more money if you were to sell your house. Now, you take San Francisco. You know, how long do you think that boar's nest out there is going to last? How about New York? Now, that's a zoo if I ever saw one. In Chicago? I was driving through Chicago one time. Now, you got to understand, you know, we're just country boys, and we're not really tuned in to you people in the city. And so when we get into the city and we see these kinds of events, we call these zoos. Well, anyway, it was about 1:30 in the morning, and I'd been speaking to a group of people up in Hillside, Illinois, and on my way through downtown Chicago, Illinois, heading southbound on the Eisenhower Freeway, I looked down at my gas gauge and noted that it was low on gas. And noticing the bright lights of the city, there was a Shell station up ahead. So I took the off-ramp and I went down into downtown Chicago, Illinois. And I pulled into the service station. And there was about two other cars in the service station. And I could tell, I just got this feeling that this isn't normal. This isn't really too good a place to be. So I got out, and they don't sell you gasoline until you pay first. I mean, tain't like here where you go fill up and then you walk in, buy a cup of coffee, chit-chat with the cashier, pay your bill, and walk out. Downtown Chicago, you walk up to the window. And you don't go inside. Oh, no, the doors are locked. The doors are locked, and they got bulletproof glass. And they got big signs around there, bulletproof glass. And then there's this drawer that comes out. And I walked up there, and I didn't know quite what to expect. And there's this guy inside, a very, very sour-looking guy inside, who points down, and he's got a microphone in there. You don't talk to this guy. There's a microphone. He points down, and he said, "Put the money in the drawer." There was this drawer in front of me. So I put my $100 bill in the drawer, and he took it inside. And then I went out and pumped my gas. Then I came back over, and I got my change. Hey, I could tell that this wasn't normal. And later on, I was telling this experience to a guy, and he says, "You stop for gasoline in downtown Chicago at 1:30 in the morning? God, you must have been a farmer from the hills." Yeah, I was. I was a farmer from the hills. I won't do that again, but I just wanted to share with you. I did it once. I must have had 36 guardian angels protecting me at the time I stopped to fuel up there. I probably needed 36 guardian angels. If you take a look at the neighborhood and take a look at the people that were in there at 1:30, that was enough to kind of scare the living hell out of you. Of course, I was just a dumb hillbilly. I didn't know any better, and so I got through. I went through New York City about the same way. I spoke at Queens College there in New York. I got to describe this to you. Queens College, New York City. Got to remember now, I'm a hillbilly. And I pulled up to the gate. They've got armed
gates. I mean, they've got gates with blockhouses in a college. I thought, this must be a damn prison. They had razor wire. They got a fence around the college with razor wire on top of it. That's what we had at the Boise State Penitentiary. The only place I'd ever seen with razor wire was the penitentiary. No, this is a college. College! And you got to have ID. You got to be passed to get in there. You know, the guards come out and it's like a security zone, you know. Have you got your papers in order, boy? What are you coming in here for? What do you want in here in a college? Oh, I'd like to come in here and talk to some people. They're waiting for me in there, and they're expecting me. And so the guy calls up, and he comes back out, and he cleared me, let me go in there. Came into New York City, and I looked off to my left, and I saw a school bus yard over there. Must have had a couple hundred school buses in there. It was fenced in. It had razor wire all around it. This is in the city. This is New York. Now, you people in New York probably think that's normal where I live out here in the country. We don't see razor wire except around penitentiaries where they want to keep bad people inside. They ain't trying to keep us good guys out. I think you people in New York have that backwards, but then, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But have you thought about maybe leaving Sodom and Gomorrah before it rains fire and brimstone? It's a wild new concept, I got to tell you. But the reason that I thought I would bring these disasters to your attention is because these disasters, remember, are now two-thirds, 67% more frequent now in the last 10 or 20 years than they have been in the past. And this global warming, remember we started off with global warming? Hey, this global warming isn't being caused by you burning gasoline in your car. It's being caused by volcanoes around the world, 260 of them around the world that are active. What'd they say? There was 1,500 volcanoes around the world. There's probably that many or more under the oceans. I never knew that before, but I did see a story. I've seen some molten rock coming out of some undersea volcanoes. I guess those are fissures, and they give off gases, and those gases end up in our atmosphere, and they're causing things to get warmer. Have you thought maybe that God Almighty, the God of Abraham, maybe is causing greater volcanic activity? I mean, this is the guy that says that he created the sun. This is the guy that said he created the universe. This is the guy that said he created the earth. Do you suppose maybe a guy that can create the earth could maybe manipulate it a little bit? A guy that could create the meteorological sciences or the meteorological events that transpire, maybe could control them. I think maybe that this God would be a better bet to stop a Hurricane Katrina than FEMA would be to pick up the pieces afterwards. Have you ever thought about that? Now, in Matthew 24, the Messiah made an observation, and I'm going to share it with you. He said, there's coming a time when all life on this planet will be at risk. I'm going to flip over that right there. I've got a couple, 3 minutes here. Matthew chapter 24, he says, there's going to come a time when life on the planet, not just some life, all life. In verse 22, he says, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect saved, those days shall be shortened. He said, I'm going to intervene in this zoo, and I'm going to cut this thing short at some point in time. But he ain't cutting it short until he kills 90% of us. 90%. Let me show you where that's at. That's in Isaiah chapter 6, verse 13. Isaiah, one of the major prophets. In fact, he's the first of the major prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And this is written line upon line, precept upon precept. Listen to this, 6:13. He says, but yet in it shall be a tenth, and it shall return and shall be eaten, as a teal tree and as an oak tree, whose substance is in them, and they shall cast their leaves, so that the holy seed shall be the substance thereof. The holy seed, the Israelites, going to leave a tenth of us alive. Hey, that's what the Club of Rome has in mind for us, and the Georgia Guidestones. Remember that story? Hey, there's some bad people out there that are intending some very bad things, and you and I aren't helping them out. Are helping ourselves a great deal by eating bad food, living in bad places. Matthew 24 leaves one more suggestion. He said, you ought to flee to the mountains. I looked at that some years back and I said, flee to the mountains, flee to the mountains. You mean I should flee to the mountains before these events transpire? Verse 19, woe to them that are with child and them that give suck in those days, but pray that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, nor ever shall be again. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect saved those days shall be shortened. He goes on, there's a statement in here somewhere, I can't put my finger right on it right now, but here in Matthew 24 he says, flee to the mountains. See if I can find it. It should be right around here, you know. Yeah, it's verse 16. Then let them which be in Judea flee to the mountains. In Judea. That's over in Jerusalem. That's over in Israel. Hey, listen, you guys over in Israel, you ought to be fleeing to the mountains. Hey, have you paid attention? Are you paying attention to the privateer and the international forecaster? Do any of you people ever subscribe to some of these underground newsletters or these private newsletters? You ought to. I'm going to give you a couple of three samples in upcoming programs here as to what we're talking about by these disasters. But you've got this Battle of Armageddon coming 35 miles northeast of downtown Jerusalem. You really sure that you want to be there in downtown Jerusalem when 200 million Chinese come in there to fight a war on that piece of real estate? And what do you think you guys are going to be fighting over? Bagels? Or oil? I'll just bet you're going to be fighting over oil. The Saudi government is on thin ice, about to be overthrown. And you can rest assured that when the Saudi government is overthrown, the United States will be in there in Saudi Arabia to take over that oil along with the Iraqi oil. And when America and Great Britain are controlling all the oil in the Middle East, which is vital to Japan and China and Brazil and a whole bunch of other people out there, that there's going to be a lot of international geopolitical turmoil, don't you think? Yeah, that's what all of the pundits are telling us. Now pay attention to what's going on over there in Iraq. That's a disaster in the making. Not only are we on the verge of being defeated over there, we can't allow ourselves to be defeated. We got to keep after it. And that's going to be a tough nut to crack. And you got Bible prophecy and a God of the universe over here who's ticked off at us all at the same time. And Katrina and the Gulf Coast and that earthquake and that tsunami are the tips of the icebergs. A guy that says, I'm a jealous God and I am furious, you guys, for giving me the finger. Now that's what disease is all about. I'm about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll be back here talking about these things called natural disasters and just how natural are these natural disasters next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Tomorrow night, same time, same station. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet on our website by title and date. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.